They held the trial in Edinburgh. There wasn't much choice in that. Given the recent threats to the senior counsel and the unexpected intensity of the attack at Demon Reach, they wanted the most secure environment they could get. The trial was supposed to be held in closed session, according to the traditions of how such things were done, but this one was too big. Better than 500 wizards, a sizable minority of the whole council, would be there. Most of them would be allies of Lafortier and their supporters, who were more than eager to see justice done, which is a much prettier thing to do than to take bloodthirsty vengeance. Molly, Mouse, and I took the way, just as I had before. This time, when I reached the door, there was a double-sized complement of wardens on duty, led by the big Scandinavian, all of them from the old guard. I got a communal hostile glare from them as I approached, with only a desultory effort to disguise it as indifference. I ignored it. I was used to it. We went into the complex, past the guard stations, they were all fully manned as well, and walked toward the speaking room. Maybe it said something about the mindset of wizards in general that the place was called the speaking room, and not the listening room, or in the more common vernacular, an auditorium. It was an auditorium, though. Rows of stone benches rising in a full circle around a fairly small circular stone stage, rather like the old Greek theaters. But before we got to the speaking room, I turned off down a side passage. With difficulty, I got the wardens on guard to allow me, Mouse, and Molly into the ostentatiatory while one of them went to Ebenezer's room and asked him if he would see me. Molly had never been into the enormous room before and stared around it with unabashed curiosity. "This place is amazing," she said. "Is the food for the bigwigs only, or do you think they'd mind if I ate something?" "Ancient Mai doesn't weigh much more than a bird," I said. "Lafortier's dead, and they haven't replaced him yet. I figure there's extra." She frowned. "But is it supposed to be only for them?" I shrugged. "You're hungry. It's food. What do you think?" "I think I don't want to make anyone angry at me." "Angrier." The kid has better sense than I do, in some matters. Ebenezer sent the warden back to bring me up to his room at once, and he'd already told the man to make sure Molly was fed from the buffet table. I tried not to smile at that. Ebenezer was of the opinion that apprentices were always hungry. Can't imagine who ever gave him that impression. I looked around his receiving room, which was lined with bookshelves filled to groaning. Ebenezer was an eclectic reader. King, Heinlein, and Clancy were piled up on the same shelves as Hawking and Nietzsche. Multiple variants of the great religious texts of the world were shamelessly mixed with the writings of Julius Caesar and D.H. Lawrence. Hundreds of books were handmade and handwritten, including illuminated grimoires any museum worth the name would readily steal, given the chance. Books were crammed in, both vertically and horizontally, and though the spines were mostly out, it seemed clear to me that it would take the patience of Job to find anything, unless one remembered where it had been most recently placed. Only one shelf looked neat. It was a row of plain leather-bound journals, all obviously of the same general design, but made with subtly different leathers and subtly different dyes that had aged independently of one another into different textures and shades. The books got older and more cracked and weathered rapidly as they moved from right to left. The leftmost pair looked like they might be in danger of falling to dust. The rightmost journal looked new and was sitting open. A pen held the pages down, maybe 30 pages in. I glanced at the last visible page, where Ebenezer's writing flowed in a strong, blocky style. Seems clear that he had no idea of the island's original purpose. I sometimes can't help but think that there is such a thing as fate, or at least a higher power of some sort, attempting to arrange events in our favor, despite everything we, in our ignorance, do to thwart it. The Merlin has demanded that we put the boy under surveillance at once. I think he's a damn fool. Rashid says that warning him about the island would be pointless. He's a good judge of people, but I'm not so sure he's right this time. The boy's got a solid head on his shoulders, generally. And of all the wizards I know, he's among the three or four I'd be willing to see take up that particular mantle. I trust his judgment. But then again, I trusted Maggie's, too. Ebenezer's voice interrupted my reading. "Hoss," he said, "how's your head?" "Full of questions," I replied. I closed the journal and offered him the pen. My old mentor's smile only touched his eyes as he took the pen from me. He'd intended me to see what he'd written. "My journal," he said. "Well, the last three are. The ones before that were from my master." "Master, huh?" "Didn't used to be a dirty word, Hoss. It meant teacher, guide, protector, professional, expert, as well as the negative things. But it's the nature of folks to remember the bad things and forget the good, I suppose." He tapped the three books previous to his own. "My master's writings," he tapped the next four, "his master's writings, and so on, back to here." He touched the first two books very gently. "Can't hardly read them no more, even if you can make it through the language." "Who wrote those two?"
"Merlin,"
Ebenezer said simply. He reached past me to put his own journal back up in place. "One of these days, Hoss, I think I'll need you to take care of these for me." I looked from the old man to the books. The journals and personal thoughts of master wizards for more than 1,000 years? Ye gods and little fishes. That would be one hell of a read. "Maybe," Ebenezer said, "you'd have a thought or two of your own someday that you'd want to write down." "Always the optimist, sir." He smiled briefly. "Well, what brings you here before you head to the trial?" I passed him the manila envelope Vince had given me. He frowned at me and then started looking through pictures. His frown deepened until he got to the very last picture. He stopped breathing, and I was sure that he understood the implication. Ebenezer's brain doesn't let much grass grow under its lobes. "Stars and stones, Hoss," Ebenezer said quietly. "Thought ahead this time, didn't you?" "Even a broken clock gets it right occasionally," I said. He put the papers back in the envelope and gave it back to me. "Okay. How do you see this playing out?" "At the trial, right before the end. I want him thinking he's gotten away with it." Ebenezer snorted. "You're gonna make Ancient Mai and about 500 former associates of Le Fortier very angry." "Yeah, I hardly slept last night, I was so worried about him," he snorted. "I've got a theory about something."
"Oh?"
I told him. Ebenezer's face darkened sentence by sentence. He turned his hands palm up and looked down at them. They were broad, strong, seamed, and calloused with work, and they were steady. There were scabs on one palm, where he had fallen to the ground during the last night's melee. Ink stained some of his fingertips. "I'll need to take some steps," he said. "You'd best get a move on." I nodded. "See you there?" He took his spectacles off and began to polish the lenses carefully with a handkerchief.
"Aye,"